Hey everyone, welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm kicking off today's daily editorials with Brian Lenny, founder and editor of the Junior Stock Review website, and also writes the premium newsletter under that same website. Now, Brian, recently you have been coming out with, it's actually a series of articles, three articles in total, that are taking a deep dive into this whole electric vehicle narrative. But really, the big picture here is the move to zero or net zero carbon emissions, this global goal that I believe is heading for, well, it's actually coming fairly quickly up on us here. Now, of course, this is a global initiative and there is a lot at play, but I do think that the market has become saturated with a lot of these pundits that are using some of the easy and maybe more relatable topics when it comes to reducing global carbon emissions. And it's not looking at really what happens, either developing some of this energy or developing some of the products to lower our carbon footprint. Now, as I mentioned, you put out a three-part series on this. There's some long articles there that go into a lot of detail. What are some of the key data points and key arguments that you're looking at here to try to put a balance to this whole initiative and argument?
Balance is a really good way to put it, because I think there is sort of an over-exuberance in the market when it comes to, you know, EV adoption and this whole idea of net zero carbon emissions worldwide. So for me, I'm an engineer. I like to break things down and concentrate my efforts on really using Pareto's law to my advantage. So looking at the top 20% of any data set, and, you know, usually that top 20% reflects 80% of the issue. So what I did is I took the publicly available data from the International Energy Agency, and I broke it down looking at carbon emissions and concentrate looking for what countries I need to look at in terms of their influence on this, you know, net zero goal by 2050. And I think, you know, if you can narrow it down, then that can definitely focus your attention. From there, you know, there's three countries that stick out like a sore thumb: China, the EU, and the United States. You know, these guys make up, you know, roughly 50% of the total carbon emissions worldwide. And therefore, you know, they're the big hitters. Those are the countries we need to look at whenever it comes to how to gauge, you know, the impact of this new global paradigm shift on the metals markets. So when you break that down, you can see that, you know, the top three causes of carbon emissions worldwide, especially in these top three countries, are electricity and heat generation at number one, then transportation, and then industry. While electricity and heat generation are the number one, in my view, most of the concentration is on transportation. And this is really the EV sector or EV adoption, which the narrative, you know, sector-wide has been solely focused on. And in some reasons, rightfully so, and some reasons I think there's, you know, some issues with that. So what I've done is I want to look at this specifically. And over these three articles, I've kind of dove down and try to take a really balanced look at the EV adoption rate, which I think is probably the key metric that investors need to look at and understand and have a balanced view of to gauge how this is going to affect metals markets in the years ahead.
So when we discuss the EV adoption rate then, and understanding that it is different in all these countries, but we are starting to see more and more people adopting some of these electric vehicles, what is some of the crucial data to understand that it might not just be a straight line towards everybody owning an electric vehicle?
Yeah, well, there's definitely positive and negative factors. Like, I look on the positive side, and I think, you know, there's a few key things over the last few years, specifically in those top three countries, China, the US, and the EU. We've seen government incentives for their citizens to adopt vehicles, particularly in China. You know, they've had, I think it's up to 50,000 yuan, which is, I think, translates into roughly $7,000 or $8,000 US. Towards buying an EV. And in the years where that subsidy has been high, they've seen pretty good adoption. Actually, you know, in 2018, there were 2 million EVs, or I guess battery EVs, sold in China, or sold worldwide, and China accounted for 1 million of them. So you can see that the incentives clearly work. And there's some examples with the other ones too. Further, and this is not as good of an example, but some countries have taken it upon themselves to input a carbon tax, which isn't necessarily an incentive, but more of a dissuader to its citizens to use carbon emitting things, you know, like their vehicles or how they heat their homes and such. And then one of the things that I kind of grouped together, I think that EVs are sort of viewed almost as a status symbol. I heard a few guys that I play hockey with say that only rich people drive Teslas. And I thought, oh, that's pretty interesting to see that that's the perception of maybe what you would call the common guy. And I can't say that he's necessarily wrong. I would say it's probably mostly true. But it's an interesting thing to look at moving forward, because if it is a status symbol, we've seen how, you know, premium products or premium lines in our, you know, clothing or vehicles or anything else has always been something that people desire and therefore want to buy. So those might be some of the positive incentives towards EV growth in the future. The other side, the negatives, and I think COVID has been one of these really interesting things that's happened from a numbers perspective. But if you look at it in terms of how it's affected transport and could affect it in the future, you look at public transportation. You know, I've heard pundits last year saying this is the death of public transportation. Nobody's going to want to go in a bus with a group of other people because they're scared. And while I think that might be true in the short term, I think moving ahead, considering that we're in probably the next decade of focused inflation, with the cost of things and the cost of owning a car and maintaining it, I think public transportation is going to remain a key cog in our society. And I actually only see that growing. Further, you've got car sharing in the big cities, you know, where you may not necessarily be able to park your car at your house. You know, you have to find a spot on the street. Maybe not even your street, but on a street close to your house where you can't necessarily charge your EV. These car sharing subscriptions or memberships that you can buy, or even just sharing with a friend, I think become a very interesting alternative moving forward. Further, another effect of COVID, I think the people working from home, I think there's sectors, you know, like banking, insurance, you know, a bunch of my friends are in those sectors. They've been told that, you know, basically they're not coming back to the office. And, you know, that has its own effect on commercial real estate. But I think the easy kind of deduction is that, you know, these average four-person families probably don't need two vehicles anymore. Another big one is hydrogen fuel cells. You know, it's a huge topic, but I think this is opposition to the EV narrative, and it could be an alternative in the future. And then the second is infrastructure. I think that infrastructure is just not there yet to have mass adoption. And that's both correct and incorrect, where, you know, a Tesla S, Model S, has a 400 mile battery charge range. You know, most people aren't driving 400 miles in their daily life, and therefore they should be able to recharge that thing at night, you know, every day. But the fact is, that's not how most people work. Most people will forget or neglect it and try to push it, and then they'll end up stranded. And there isn't that infrastructure where people can go back and go anywhere and charge their vehicle. So it could be a problem. And so these are some of the negatives that I see moving forward. And I think, you know, regardless of what goes on, we're going to have to get past these hurdles for that EV adoption rate to be at that probably 30% level.
Oh, yeah. There's still a lot of hurdles, right? And especially when you also carry it through just past, let's say, personal transit and actually to transport when it comes to shipping products, too, through trucks that, well, if we do start to adopt electric vehicles there, then, yeah, we do need that infrastructure built out. Brian, from a high-level aspect, though, who or which group of people do you think it falls on to continue to advance this adoption narrative? Is it governments to continue to provide incentives? Is it individuals to take it upon themselves to maybe spend a little bit more money on cleaner cars? Or is it on companies to, well, start to shift their whole product lines towards that?
From a personal point of view, I think everything should always be based off the market, and therefore that's based off the individual choice of people. But that's not the society we live in, and I only see the individual's choices probably narrowing in the future, and therefore in the actual society we live in, it looks like it is going to be government that's going to be driving this. And that's another big question mark, you know, with debts at all-time highs coming out of this COVID crisis, you know, where is the extra money going to come from to incentivize people to buy these things and to build the infrastructure. And, you know, they're big question marks. You know, modern monetary theory says you just keep on printing, and maybe that's the way you do it. I don't know. It doesn't compute in my head, but maybe that is how you do it. You know, everything is just free moving forward, so to speak, and there's no repercussions. But I tend to think that, you know, even if that is the case, it still isn't a straight line up. And, you know, this stuff does need to be sorted out somehow. And honestly, I have no problem against no carbon emissions. I think there's no, if you have the choice to put carbon in the air and don't, and you, that's the choice that you want to make, I think that's probably the smart choice. Cleaner air is better. But it still needs to be a market decision, not a government decision, in my view.
Yeah. And it needs to be adopted by the vast majority of people. It can't just be a handful of people or a small percentage of the population. That's a thing. This needs to be a much bigger adoption, well, globally too. But where does this all leave you when you're looking at these markets and you're seeing the runs that these EV stocks are having, that even some of the underlying metals are having? A lot based on simply this bullish outlook from a lot of the pundits and a lot of mainstream media covering this move. It seems to be very trendy to talk right now about lowering your carbon footprint and moving towards this more greener world, but markets don't move in a straight line. This adoption also is not going to move in a straight line.
No, and you know, I think that's a key point. I have to underline the fact that I am bullish on metals. I absolutely see higher metal prices in the future and more demand, especially for these battery metals, regardless of all these things that we've talked about. But I do think a balanced view of the market is how investors are best to approach it, because those hurdles in the future are going to bring these share prices in these companies back. And, you know, like if you parallel it to the precious metals market right now, there is a lot of bearishness on the gold price, maybe on the silver price. You know, the silver squeeze, so to speak, narrative is still fairly strong. But, you know, this negative connotation with where gold prices are headed after that big boom last year, this is when you need to be buying. Like it's you need to think contrary to that trend. And, you know, if you can think more big picture, then, you know, this is your opportunity if you missed it last year. And the same goes for the EVs. Like after Biden's win last fall, then if you look on most like uranium company, copper, any of the battery metals, like it's, you know, it looks like Mount Everest, like it's going to the moon. But the fact is, it's going to come back at some point, and there all these negative things are going to come up and people are going to start to doubt. I think this is a trend in motion. It's just probably going to take a little bit longer than 2050 to attain something as grand as you know, zero net emissions. But I think it's a trend in motion that's not going to be broken. So, you know, when the chance does arise and you can get some of these companies on sale when people are thinking negatively against it, you know, that again is another great opportunity.
Yeah, just right now, they're not thinking negatively against it, right? So now we just need to wait for that sentiment to change. And undoubtedly, when we're talking 10, 20, 30 years out, sentiment does adjust and change. So we'll see. We'll cover it. And you know what? I'll post a link to your website and all the premium subscribers can read over these articles. You have already two out. I believe you're releasing a third one today on Friday. But hey, there's a lot of information in them. And we're going to continue to talk about this narrative because it is very important to outline. And if any of you, our listeners, have any questions or your own comments that you want to bring up involving this discussion, please feel free to email me, fleck@kereport.com. Brian, I appreciate these, let's call them initial insights into that balance of the EV market narrative. And like I said, we're going to be following up as we continue to chat throughout really the rest of this year, I believe, and probably into many, many more future years. Brian, I appreciate your time today. Thanks for taking some time and have a great weekend.
Thanks for having me, Corey.